Hi, everybody, and welcome to Context Countdown. I'm Andrew Kripko, and this week, I'll be going over my 2019 forecast for Eurasia, so let's go across the supercontinent step by step. Third in our countdown are my predictions for Europe. The past usually informs the present, so with that in mind, it's worthwhile to highlight the most important events in Europe over the past year and then prognosticate where they might be headed. In any given order, these were the UK moving towards a so-called hard Brexit, the Polish-led Three Seas Initiative strengthening into a more cohesive, US-backed cordon sanitaire between Russia and Germany, left-wing and right-wing populist parties forming a coalition government in Italy, France and Germany experiencing different degrees of popular unrest for their economic and migrant policies respectively, and disturbing developments in the Balkans after Macedonia's Color Revolution government signed a controversial name deal with Greece and the NATO-occupied Serbian province of Kosovo declared the creation of its own army. Beginning with the first-mentioned event, the UK will probably go forward with the hard Brexit despite some speculation that it's having second thoughts about this. The political instability that emerged over the past few months because of Prime Minister May's lack of leadership on this issue might lead to regime change in the country, the specific consequences of which are difficult to predict, but which might either lead to Labour taking the reins or a more conservative figure coming to power. Across the channel, the EU will be pressured to resolve its lingering identity crisis and decide whether it will move towards a full-blown centralization under German leadership or along the lines of the Polish-led decentralization model being pioneered by the Three Seas Initiative. About that integrational project, Warsaw is working hand-in-hand with Washington to reestablish itself as a significant regional power capable of complicating Russian-German relations. While the Polish-American efforts to undermine Nord Stream 2 probably won't be successful, the two countries will probably deepen their energy ties with one another and attempt to extend them all across the 3C space in streamlining more expensive energy corridors that serve the political purpose of diversifying their economies away from their erstwhile Russian energy dependence. That, however, is what the plan looks like on paper, but it probably won't be implemented that easily in practice once Nord Stream 2 and Turkish Stream enter into operation. All told, the geopolitical objectives of the Three Seas Initiative are visionary but unlikely to be fulfilled anytime soon. That said, the ideological movement of Euro-realist decentralization that it represents is much more influential in the sense that it's already creating a sub-regional lobbying bloc of sorts in the Visegrad Group that plans to expand throughout the Central and Eastern European region to more confidently challenge the ruling Euro-liberals in Western Europe. The political processes that were unleashed over the past few years finally spread to Italy in early 2018 and resulted in the unprecedented formation of a left-wing and right-wing populist coalition government that immensely complicated the Franco-German axis's efforts to centralize European affairs following Brexit's surprise summer 2016 electoral victory. This development will continue to shape intra-European affairs over the next year and turn Italy into one of the most politically influential states on the continent. In what is commonly regarded as Europe's forgotten corner of southeastern Europe, the Balkans are once again mildly rumbling with unrest for a few reasons. Firstly, Macedonia's Color Revolution government is defying the people's will by going forward with its controversial name agreement with Greece, despite this initiative failing to pass the minimum threshold of support during a recent referendum to enter into legal practice. There are also fears that the authorities want to internally partition the country by devolving into a federation between the Macedonian majority and the Albanian minority. The so-called Albanian question was also in the news once again when Kosovo decided to violate its own self-promulgated constitution by creating an army, though Belgrade is unlikely to take any tangible reaction against this. Altogether, the prevailing trends that will shape European events over the next year are the struggle between the Euro-realists and Euro-liberals in deciding the future of the EU, the rise of the Three Seas Initiative as a US-backed cordon sanitaire between Russia and Germany, and American meddling in the conflict-prone Balkan. Although unlikely, it's possible that France and Germany might begin to compete for leadership of the EU if Macron senses that Merkel is too weak to continue ruling it. And there's also a chance that Ukraine might experience another round of internal conflict. Taken together, the mega trend is that Europe is in the midst of a profound systemic transition that will make this previously stable region of Eurasia all the more unpredictable in the future. Now let's take a look at how events might unfold in the Mideast. As has been the case for years already, the Mideast experienced a lot of geopolitical dynamicism over the past 12 months that will shape the year to come. In any order of significance, the region saw the return of unilaterally imposed U.S. sanctions on Iran, superficial but nevertheless promising progress being made on the Syrian and Yemeni peace processes, an exacerbation of the region-wide fault line between Turkey and Qatar on one side and Saudi Arabia and Israel on the other, and the rise of Russia as a pivotal balancing force for maintaining stability. The influence that each of these developments will have on regional affairs in 2019 will now be explained. Concerning Iran, the Islamic Republic might slide into pronounced socioeconomic instability if the U.S. doesn't extend its previously granted waivers and the country's international partners shy away from conducting business with it through alternative channels, out of fear that America's secondary sanctions will harm their enterprises. That said, Iran has extensive experience weathering the worst economic sanctions in the world and might not enter into a political crisis because of it. What observers should keep an eye on, however, is whether it'll shift its strategic focus from West Asia to Central, Southern, and Eastern Asia in response to this pressure, possibly if it concludes that its influence in the Mashriq has climaxed and that a geopolitical rebalancing is urgently needed. Such a strategic rethink might occur as part of the incipient peace process in Syria that was greatly boosted by the U.S.'s planned withdrawal sometime in early 2019. Russia might encourage Damascus to request Iran's dignified but phased withdrawal as a reciprocal measure sometime down the line, wagering that it's preferable to having Israel recommence its airstrikes on IRGC and Hezbollah positions in the country. As for the Northeast, it's unclear whether it'll fall under prolonged Turkish occupation or if Turkish-backed rebel groups will take control of it instead, but either way, a decentralized political solution is probably inevitable in some form or another at this point, and that might make it more difficult for Iran to maintain its military presence in the country. Looking beyond the Levant and towards the Arabian Peninsula, Yemen also showed signs of crawling towards peace, albeit at a much slower pace than in Syria, seeing as how the process there only just started at the end of 2018. As with the Arab Republic, however, a decentralized political solution might also be advanced in order to retain the sub-state regional sovereignty that South Yemen recently regained, while also allowing the Houthis in North Yemen some degree of self-rule. This won't affect Iran as much as it would Saudi Arabia, though, but the kingdom might have exhausted its political will, military firepower, and financial resources and be ready for that sort of possibly Russian-facilitated compromise. On the topic of Saudi Arabia, it and its unofficially but widely acknowledged Israeli ally aren't just working in tandem to contain Iran anymore, but also Turkey as well, after each of them began to perceive of it as a major threat to their interests for different reasons. Riyadh is also in a rivalry with Doha too, though Tel Aviv isn't that involved in the GCC Cold War. In any case, a simplified breakdown of the region reveals that Saudi Arabia and Israel are more or less working together against Turkey and its Qatari ally in a Mideast-wide competition that stretches from the Eastern Mediterranean to the Persian Gulf and even the Red Sea when it comes to Sudan, for example. Faced with so much uncertainty, the Mideast might initially come off as the most unstable region in the world today, but the fact of the matter is that Russia's balancing strategy has brought a semblance of stability where there'd otherwise be none. Moscow can't manage the Mideast on its own, but what it can do, and has been mildly successful in doing, is to behave as a neutral broker in bringing different players together, or at least acting as a bridge between them. This is the most assured constant in contemporary Mideast affairs and will prove pivotal in determining the outcome of the war on Syria, which is itself the most regionally transformative event in a generation, and perhaps also the other aforementioned issues that were discussed. And finally, Here's what I think will happen in South, East, and Southeast Asia next year. The broad swath of space stretching from South, East, and Southeast Asia is fast becoming the center of geostrategic gravity in the world, and it's here where much has already happened last year and where a lot more will probably occur in the next. From Trump's summit with Kim to the fledgling rapprochement between China and India, 2018 set in motion some important trends that are likely to carry into the future and reshape this part of the Eastern Hemisphere and beyond. Starting with East Asia, the Trump-Kim summit was welcomed by the entire world, but more tangible progress needs to be seen before declaring the reconciliation a success instead of the headline-grabbing stunt that it technically was. Nevertheless, the drawdown in tensions between the two positively contribute to the Chinese-Japanese rapprochement, which was also a reaction to Trump's so-called trade war. These interconnected events resulted in 2018 ending much more differently than it began for East Asia, in that the risk of war is now lower than it's ever been for decades after the U.S. signaled that it's not interested in attacking North Korea so long as Pyongyang remains committed to Trump's vague denuclearization plan. In South Asia, China's all-weather ally Pakistan elected popular cricketer and anti-corruption activist Imran Khan as its prime minister, after which he extended an olive branch to India that was regrettably whacked away by Prime Minister Modi. Interestingly, however, India and China moved past their 2017 dispute over Donglang Doklam and unveiled the China-India Plus One format of trilateral cooperation and third-party states, opening up the possibility of converging their new Silk Road and Asia-Africa Growth Corridor projects in countries such as Afghanistan, Maldives, Sri Lanka, Myanmar, and the littoral states of East Africa. The progressive movement towards a détente of sorts between these two Asian gray powers represents one of the most promising trends of the past year. As for Southeast Asia, the so-called Quad has faltered and no longer seems capable of militarily containing China and the South China Sea, weakened as it was by Beijing's breakthrough approaches with both Tokyo and New Delhi. The U.S. will likely continue to provoke China in these waters, but the countries of the region don't seem willing to get involved in behaving as America's cat's paw, especially not Vietnam, which has noticeably improved its relations with China over the past few years, following a naval standoff in 2014. Indonesia seems to be on board with China's new Silk Road, as are the mainland states of the Greater Mekong region, though all of them also have their own ties with India and Japan as well. The overarching trend is that the actual and aspiring great powers of the region, with the exception of India and Pakistan, seem to have reached an understanding with one another to handle their disputes in a peaceful manner and avoid being used by the U.S. to divide and rule this part of Asia. Seeing as how the two main transnational projects are China's New Silk Road and the joint Indo-Japanese-Asia-Africa Growth Corridor, it's possible that they could either converge in smaller to medium-sized states or enter into friendly competition with one another to the host country's ultimate benefit, with the outcome depending on diplomacy between all parties and the leverage of the third-party state involved. Overall, the prognosis for South, East, and Southeast Asia in 2019 is generally positive, though there still remains the chance that some sub-regional conflicts could break out. Although the peace process in Myanmar is continuing apace, the world's longest civil war could always re-erupt, and tensions between Nepal's lowland Madhesi of the Terai and the indigenous Highlanders could put serious pressure on the communist coalition government there. In addition, Bangladesh might become destabilized as the ruling party continues to centralize its power in controversial ways, though it might be able to buy off the citizens' loyalty or at least passive approval so long as it can maintain rapid economic growth. For as optimistic as this forecast may generally be, it can be offset by the sudden failure of China's rapprochement with Japan and India, which might occur if one of the two decides to more resolutely align with the U.S. in its efforts to contain the People's Republic. Another fault line might emerge if the aforementioned smaller states, including Maldives and Sri Lanka, but especially Bangladesh, become destabilized to such a degree that they reemerge as zones of heated competition between China and the Quad's Indo-Japanese axis. Also, while Thailand's planned election earlier next year will probably go off without a hitch, any unexpectedly negative developments there could possibly change the balance of power in the Greater Mekong region with unexpected results. All right, folks, so this wraps up my 2019 forecast for Eurasia. I'm very happy that all of you tuned in to Context Countdown, not only for this episode, but all throughout the previous year. I want to wish all of you a very happy holidays and a very happy upcoming new year. Thank you again, and happy new year. Bye.